This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Is this a war all of a sudden? Have we crossed the threshold in this country? That's all people were talking about on the steamy summer stoops this weekend in my neighborhood. The long, hot summer of 16 just getting started. And where is it all headed, people were asking.
Black people, we're not violent. We're not riotous people. We just want our voice to be heard. And for too long, people haven't listened to it.
It's important so people who are aware and our lawmakers are aware this is an important issue that can't be swept under the rug and that we're here for justice.
Black people do need to be in these streets and we do need to be like protesting.
We let it die down. Another black man dead.
Be human.
We let it die down. Another black man dead.
Talk about it.
How many more? How many more?
This is a person with...
Have enough of us concluded that the police are systematically targeting blacks and people of color? Have enough of us concluded that the solution is to kill white people, as 25-year-old veteran Micah Johnson reportedly did in the weeks of planning leading up to the deliberate murders of five white officers in Dallas last week? There is more than enough anger in America right now, and people are stoking it.
When you say Black Lives Matter, that's inherently racist. Asian lives matter, Hispanic lives matter. That's anti-American, and it's racist.
More than enough voices like the former mayor of New York City, Rudy Giuliani, taking sides, expressing outrage. There are more than enough guns, as we keep learning each week.
Those who pursue common sense improvement are beaten down. Reason is criticized. Instruction is praised. What is the tipping point?
And there is a ready-to-go narrative of racial warfare in America going back two centuries. Slave rebellions in New York City back in 1712 and 1741. John Brown's Reign of Terror, which was widely believed to be a plot by the North to create a race war in the South. In shooting President Lincoln, John Wilkes Booth claimed, quote, "This country was formed for the white, not for the black man," a theme picked up by the KKK in its angry, murderous, and garbled calls for white power. Then there were the Turner Diaries from 1978, a dreadfully written novel about a race war started to prevent the government from suspending the Constitution. The Turner Diaries seemed to inspire Timothy McVeigh's bombing of a federal building in 1995. Rhetoric of this kind and narratives of this kind come from all quarters. In 1967, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee did not seem so nonviolent.
I say violence is necessary. Violence is a part of America's culture. It is as American as cherry pie. American taught the black people to be violent. We will use that violence to rid ourselves of oppression if necessary.
That was SNCC leader and Black Panther Jameel Abdullah Al-Amin, also known as H-Rap Brown, delivering a message that very much paralleled the nonviolent protest message of African-American activists like Dr. Martin Luther King. The Black Lives Matter movement of today would be very recognizable to white and black activists of the 1960s, and it has attracted very familiar attacks from white public figures. The president has cut short his European trip, will speak tomorrow at the memorial service for the Dallas cops, and has also condemned the recent police shootings of civilians in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and St. Paul, Minnesota. In the words of a very brave and emotional Dallas police chief, David Brown, "All I know is this must stop." Is this the edge of something like a race war? Stanley Nelson is a documentary film director and MacArthur Fellow. His most recent film is The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. Stanley Nelson, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you so much.
Do you feel as though we're on the edge of something here and that there is a narrative ready to go if enough people decide to engage?
Well, I hope we're on the edge of something. I think that we may be on the edge of something good. I think that people are looking at police violence, people are looking at racism in a different way than they were certainly even 3 days ago.
How would we know one way or another, and how did people know back in the 60s which direction things were headed?
Well, I think one thing that's important to remember about the 60s is that, you know, it was a movement not only of African Americans, but it was a movement of all people. You know, if you look at any of the huge marches, it's not just black Americans, it's white Americans, Asians, Latinos. Everybody is participating. And I think just as today, you know, everybody's outraged by what's going on. And I hope that, you know, we are at the start of a movement.
Although back in the 60s, it seemed as though presidential candidates, political leaders, political institutions were directly engaged in what was going on in the conversation about race in America. Certainly President Obama is engaged, but he's not, you know, he's an outgoing president. I don't see the presidential candidates engaged. This seems to be a sideshow to the American political theater in 2016.
You know, I think it takes a moment for any candidate to become involved. But I think it's really important that you know, we speak honestly about what's going on. You know, Donald Trump has fanned the flames of racism in this country. You know, for African Americans, you know, he was a real driving force in the birther movement. He started out his campaign by calling Mexicans rapists. He's called for banning Muslims from this country. And so there's this feeling that, you know, we're under attack. And at the same time, other Republicans are saying, that's racist, but we'll still support him. You know, it's very scary, I think, for African Americans to look out and say Donald Trump has over 50% of the white male vote. So, you know, we walk down the street, we look at two white men and say one of them is going to vote for Donald Trump, who is really spouting racist rhetoric constantly.
As unfortunate as that rhetoric is, it also seems as though that is disconnected from the facts of what's going on over the last couple of years in the United States. You know, video didn't invent the police shootings. If that is the case, I mean, there does have to be some more direct engagement by political leaders about what is the function of cops than just, you know, the kinds of superficial rhetoric of Donald Trump, as unfortunate as it is, and what Hillary Clinton is saying about we have to come together. It's got to be more detailed and concrete than that, it seems.
You know, everybody is struggling to figure out what is going on, and I don't think there are any, you know, clear, quick answers. I think that there's a feeling that there's a culture in the police department that has to change. And how do you change a culture? You know, I think one of the most, you know, startling things that's happened is that these, you know, killings have gone on in every sector of the country. It's not just one place. You know, it's not just the South. It's not just the North. It's not just the East. So, you know, what does that say about police departments? I think that you're right, that you know, the difference is that people have a camera in their pocket, you know, and they're able to film these things. And so that's what's changed the way we look at it, because we now have been able to see it, and it's impossible to deny.
I was talking with people in my neighborhood over the weekend, and, you know, the thing that really disturbed me was a sense that we have a much narrower margin for error right now, that there's not a lot of slack in terms of what could trigger events in a very unpredictable way. One person said to me that we're just two Micah Johnsons away from martial law in this country. And I just didn't know what to say to that.
I hope that we're not that close, but, you know, I think that we are, again, at an extraordinary time, that you have, you know, a Republican candidate for the presidency of the United States, or presumptive Republican nominee for the presidency, who is spouting very, very inflammatory and racist statements, and that's fanning the flames of where we are. And I think it's important to understand that, you know, in my lifetime, I've never seen any candidate like this. And so I think that's one of the things that seems like it's really pulling us apart, because you have, you know, a huge portion of the country, 40% at the very least, that is going to vote for this man. And I think it's shocking to so many people, because we're not the country that so many of us thought we were.
Is race war an old story in America, and is it a narrative that comes right off the shelf if people want to go there? And if they don't want to go there, in their local neighborhoods, what do they do?
I don't think we're at a place where race war is really a possibility. I don't think it's ever really been a possibility. I think we're at a place, hopefully, where change is something that people are thinking about. You know, that black people and white people, Asian, Latino, everybody in this country is thinking about, how do we get better? I mean, that's one of the things that the United States offers, you know, is the chance to get better. And how is it not just kind of a black and white issue? You know, that's what's also shocking, I think, in some ways to me and African Americans, you know, you see a black person, you know, murdered, and it's a black issue. It's not a black issue. It's an issue for all of us.
And do you see people opting out of this rhetoric and deciding to express solidarity in their own communities, black and white?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I am very heartened by young people. You know, when you look at these demonstrations that are taking place all over the country, you know, it's not just black people. It's everybody who's protesting. And I think that's what we have to understand, that, you know, this has to be everybody who protests these police killings that have gone on, you know, over and over again. And for the last 2 years, you know, because of video cameras that we have in our pockets, we've seen evidence that this is really happening, you know, irrefutable evidence. Before, we could kind of pass it off. Oh, he had a gun. Oh, he must have been doing something wrong. Oh, there must have been something. We can't do that now. And I think it's important for all of us as Americans to stand up and say, wait a minute, this has to stop.
Before we go, why did the civil rights movement choose a nonviolent path in the 60s, or seemingly chose a nonviolent path when there were so many other options in the 1960s?
Well, I mean, I think obviously, you know, nonviolence is the only way you can win. I mean, you know, African Americans are what, you know, 1/12 of the population or something like that. You know, we can't win a war. You know, it's not a war. You know, we're Americans. We're not against, you know, we're not fighting against the government. We're fighting for the government to change and be supportive and support all Americans. That's what the civil rights movement was about. Part of what the civil rights movement said, the very idea of the civil rights movement and the nonviolence, was to say, look at what's happening in the South. Look at the dogs. Look at the hoses. Okay, you have to pick a side. And I think that that's what maybe where we're coming to now. And I think that is maybe not a bad moment. Maybe it's a moment of change.
Stanley Nelson is a documentary film director and MacArthur Fellow. His most recent film is The Black Panthers, Vanguard of the Revolution. Thanks so much, Stanley.
Thank you so much.